The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors of this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Cornell University or its employees.
Welcome to another episode of the Inclusive Excellent Podcast. Today, we are speaking with Carolyn Chow and Brad Stock, colleagues and talent acquisition partners at Cornell. We will talk with them about their own career paths that took them from being applicants to now being recruiters who helped find applicants for Cornell. They will share how their own journey has really informed their approach to engaging with candidates and helping hiring managers. My name is Erin Sembuchase.
My name is Toral Patel.
And you are listening to the Inclusive Excellent Podcast.
Welcome, Carolyn and Brad. We are so excited to have the two of you joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And so as we get started, can you please introduce yourselves to our audience, what pronouns you use, and your roles here at Cornell?
Sure. I'll go first. My name's Carolyn Chow. My pronouns are she and her, and I am a talent acquisition partner here at Cornell, and I've been here for about 5 years.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. My name's Brad Stock. I'm a talent acquisition partner. We like to say it's a fancy name for a recruiter. I use he, him pronouns, and I've been in the role for about 2 years.
Great. I'm really happy you're both with us. So Carolyn's been at Cornell 5 years. Brad's been in this position 2 years, but you've been at Cornell a little longer, right, Brad?
Yeah, I actually started working at Cornell in 2008, soon after graduating college.
Nice, nice. So why don't you each tell us a little bit more about your professional paths up till now? Go ahead, keep going, Brad.
Sure, yeah. So I've been working in HR for, you know, like I said, those 2 years. But before that, I was with Cornell Catering, which is a part of Student and Campus Life, for about 14 years, starting in 2008. So during those 14 years, I wore a lot of different hats. It's where I got the bulk of my professional experience, to be totally honest. You know, before that, I worked in a variety of restaurants around town and a few other gigs here and there. But I started off at Cornell as a casual employee, a server bartender. And after a while, I took on a role where I delivered simple events and began interacting with clients and planning logistics and making independent decisions on my own. And when a coworker went on parental leave, I was actually offered an opportunity to cover her role as a sales manager for student events when she was away for the office. And that was all about working with students, bringing their vision alive with the budget that they have available.
Right.
And it's so much fun and challenging. The vision and budget were just not always aligned, right?
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
And soon after the coworker returned, I was very fortunate enough to be in a situation where the hiring freeze had lifted. Soon they were seeking an event coordinator, and I was hired into that role. And I took on some of the larger events that the university holds. So things like service awards and trustee council and key reunions. Events where the alumni come back and it's a big time around campus. And so after a couple of years, I was fortunate to be promoted to the role of the banquet manager. In that role, I had for a number of years before moving to HR. And I also was charged with hiring the event staff needed to accomplish all these events, which ranged quite a bit, you know, year to year. And that was, you know, one of the big inspirations for me to kind of move into the world of recruitment. And it's been a wonderful time.
That's really interesting. So I'm just realizing you could be single-handedly the party planning committee for HR. How did we let that go unnoticed? All right, you're out now.
Yeah.
You're out.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've really always enjoyed is maintaining to volunteer for some of the events that happen across campus.
Sure.
It's a lot of fun.
How about you, Carolyn?
Thanks for sharing that, Brad. So my journey to Cornell has been, my professional journey has been that I actually sort of started my professional career out in Seattle at the University of Washington School of Nursing. And that was a long time ago where we were really trying to look at how do we diversify healthcare populations such that the healthcare that's delivered is dealt with cultural humility and that access to healthcare services are really available to people, right?
Yeah.
And so I got a chance to sort of work in higher education, looking at strategizing how is it that we diversify a health provider population when we kind of really have a pretty heterogeneous faculty population who are making admissions decisions. And through sort of just their own conditioning and socializing, right, in terms of just sort of University of Washington's program being what it was, there was, I think, a lot of pressure for faculty to kind of, you know, go with that whole, like, we need the 4.0 GPA students, but that doesn't necessarily really reflect what you need to be an awesome nurse, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I spent actually about 20 years redeveloping entire admissions processes, training faculty and people who are making admissions decisions, mm-hmm. and thinking about how is it that we make higher education accessible to people of color, to diverse populations, to people who are just traditionally marginalized from higher education opportunities. So that sort of start at the School of Nursing at University of Washington really kind of led to an awesome experience for me where I felt like I was making a really positive difference. I was really understanding a lot of how higher education works with communities and external people trying to bring them in, right? And so, you know, fast forward to 2017, there was just sort of this need to move back from Seattle to back east. I grew up in New Jersey, but my wife is actually from this area. Mm-hmm. And we thought, you know, we want to take care of our aging family members, and that might involve a move. And when we were trying to choose locations, I full on said, let's go to Ithaca because Cornell is there and I would love to work there. Both of my parents went here. My grandfather actually also graduated from Cornell. And so Cornell's been in our family this entire, my entire life. Mm-hmm. And so sadly for my parents, none of the three kids, you know, like none of us went to Cornell. They really wanted us to, but now I work here. And what sort of my journey into Cornell was, which is interesting. I could not get a job at Cornell to save my life. Like it took me, I think, 18 months to actually land something by the time that I actually did land something. And the way that I did land it finally was sort of, I thought, okay, I'll apply to jobs in student affairs, admissions, and recruiting for students and student, you know, student services. And I just could not make any headway there. So I ended up meeting a recruiter who happened to know of a potential position coming up. And so I was just so fortunate that Toral happened to be moving on to her current position. And this recruiter knew this. So she went to Mary Beth Jordan, who's the director of HR at College of Veterinary Medicine, and said, hey, you know what? I've got this candidate here who has real potential. But the reality was I had no formal HR experience. And during those 20 years at University of Washington, I just did everything I could to avoid HR. Well, that's the thing, though. You know, I did think HR was kind of the principal's office back then, right? But when I got to Cornell, because of where we're located, how we are as a university, how decisions get made in this consensus-driven, you know, consensus model, it's really a different attitude about HR. And so what I learned is that, you know, we just really have this role that's about, if we're doing our jobs awesomely in HR, that allows everyone else we work with that's not in HR to actually really be set up for success in doing their jobs and focusing on their expertise. It's a really different mentality. The role of the talent attraction and recruitment team, you know, we really focus on how do we help bring in the best talent possible in a way that isn't just bringing them in, right, but also retaining them in a way that we can share with them how to engage their professional careers and their personal experience at Cornell.
Yeah, so I love actually listening to both of you talk about your not so straight journey into recruiting, right? Because I feel very similarly in my journey. So I think our audience knows that I also used to be a recruiter before I moved into the diversity and inclusion space. And my journey started out similarly. Hey, I had majored in HR. I got no job experience along the way. So when I graduated, I had this awesome degree, but no experience. And so nobody would hire me, right? Very similar to you, Brad, it took a colleague that went out on leave and they asked me to fill in for her. And that is how I got my first ever recruiting experience and my first ever recruiting job, because after she came back, she decided that she was actually going to relocate with her spouse somewhere else. And so that job became available and I applied for a recruiter position with, like, I think it was like 3 weeks of experience, right? And so for me, initially, it was my boss told me that your attitude is what got you the position, obviously, because there was tons of applicants that had more years of experience than I did.
You mean it wasn't exactly your technical skills?
It wasn't my technical skills. So I would actually love to hear from you, Brad, about kind of like your journey in a bit about how the unusual journey that you've taken to recruiting, how that has actually impacts how you do your current job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it kind of starts back in 2008, and it's intertwined with what kind of drew me to Cornell. That era was a very challenging one to graduate and find a job. That was the Great Recession. Right. People were really losing jobs. Cornell was in a hiring freeze. Yeah. At the time. And so I happened to have a friend who was working as a supervisor with Cornell Catering. And as I was struggling to find work, he suggested that it'd be fun to work together while I was kind of on my hunt. And so I joined the team during reunions in 2008 as a server and a bartender, very much thinking it would just be kind of a brief interaction and then I would find something else. But, as soon as I joined the team, I realized that Cornell was different from the places that I worked before. There's just this level of vision, just this huge diverse population of interesting people and a genuine care that hooked me immediately. It wasn't just about like putting food on plate, getting plate to customer, and customer eat food and hopefully they enjoy it, right? there was talk about like bringing students and faculty to the tables. And so I just, I realized that I wanted to be there. I realized that I wanted to take the opportunity to really show my value during this difficult economic time. So I made it my mission to just say yes to a lot of things because they needed help. They didn't have the ability to hire. And so there was a lot of random tasks and I had some free reign to be able to say yes to some things. So anything that they would throw at me, can you take on this new event tomorrow morning, like early? Yes, I can. Would you help us code items into our new event software? Sure, 100%. Would you be involved with the upcoming training sessions? I would love to be a part of the upcoming training sessions. And frankly, that is actually kind of what gave me a lot of experience and a broad base and allowed for me to be able to kind of have stories to tell for my interview that came up eventually. And so through my time with catering, I also really loved working with the community. In that time, it was really a lot of students. So working with students and helping them develop professionally, especially as I kind of moved along and became a full-time employee and I would work with students and manage the student managers and hired them, I would often say, hey, we're a catering company. We cater. That's true. But we're also a business and we do other things. So you're an ILR student and you'd like to learn a little bit more about the interview process. Join me. I do like 10 interviews a day some days. So let's get this going. You want to learn a little bit more about budgets. Like, let's connect you with one of the sales managers and, you can work very practically in that area. And so finding those bridges was kind of another kind of point that kind of led me to eventually getting into recruitment. And I just love being involved with training and development. And before I made the transition to work in HR, one of the, one of the things that I did, I had this wonderful opportunity to work with our current supervisor, the amazing Sonia Baylor, previous guest extraordinaire, on a recruitment event at the Greater Ithaca Activities Center. And to kind of share a little bit about that, that was very impactful for me. So the goal was to recruit dining employees. And so that ranged quite a bit. And Sonia invited me to join in on the meeting with the organizational leadership at GIAC, Greater Ithaca Activity Center. And, in that meeting, it was shared by their leadership that oftentimes, and I'll use kind of the language that was used in the meeting to help paint the picture, you folks come down off the hill when you need us. And oftentimes, folks, when you go, nobody has a job. The process is confusing. They have an expectation to go to campus multiple times for interviews, et cetera. If that's going to be the case this time, this will be the last time that you're invited to be here. And I considered that an amazing challenge and the gauntlet was thrown. I really wanted to show what we could do and thought this is an amazing opportunity to, just kind of change the impression that Cornell is making on this organization and in this community. And so one of the things that we worked through was, was, okay, let's consider what resources we have at GIAC to do as much as we can there. They have a gymnasium, they have a computer lab, they have plenty of spaces to conduct interviews. So we ended up inviting dining managers, dining workers, and culinarians to be able to come down and describe jobs. So we had printed off copies of job descriptions so folks could get a better understanding of what that looks like, talk to folks to get like the real human interaction to what does that look like in practice on a day-to-day basis, to ask questions. And then they were invited to be able to go to the computer lab if they found something that was interesting and put in an application in real time. And then right after their application was submitted, go up and interview with people in the private meeting rooms so that they can have an opportunity just to go ahead and share what their experiences are right then and there. And we could provide a verbal offer before they left that day. So there was just some stuff to do on the back end as far as, like, you know, finishing up all the things that need to happen post hire, including the written offer. And so that was super exciting and just kind of really reframed. I love what, Carolyn, what you said earlier about HR being the principal's office. Yeah. I was a hiring manager before. And understandably, like, I always considered my HR partners an amazing, valuable partnership, but it was also just kind of like eggshells, right? And so, you know, this kind of opened my eyes to a brand new way of considering HR, a brand new way of considering our community's impact to the Cornell community's impact to the local community, how that interplays and what we can do to bridge the gap that does exist there in some ways. So that really inspired my transition into the world of recruitment for sure.
That is such a great story, because you, also what you really did there, speaking to something Carolyn alluded to earlier, is you made both Cornell and the hiring process feel far more accessible.
Yeah.
To the very people that were saying we want to see themselves here.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just going down and telling them, yeah, no, we want you.
Right.
There's 10,000 steps you have to jump through
to get
in
here,
order
for,
you know, to prove that you want us to. And,
right.
You know, you didn't. You brought every aspect of that process to them.
Right.
Which probably helped demystify Cornell quite a bit. Probably helped to, quite frankly, humanize Cornell quite a bit, because let's face it, it's an Ivy League school. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of people, I myself included. I mean, I remember 20-some years ago when I realized it might actually be possible to work at Cornell, I thought, ooh, I don't know, it's Ivy League.
100%.
Like, I'm not good enough for that place, right? But it can be very easy to stop there in your process if you don't have all the steps that you both described to help make it really feel accessible and really feel like you can see yourself there.
Yeah, we made 17 hires that day. But like going back to that, what you said, Aaron, and I love that, because I grew up in Dryden, which is a town very close to Ithaca, New York. But
so
it's
you're a local
it's,
boy.
Yeah, and it's a world of difference, though, you know, and I very similarly kind of was always curious about Cornell. It was always there, but never really thought of it as a way for me to, you know, forge a career. I never, you know, I'm not a professor. What would I do at Cornell, right? And when that gauntlet was thrown at the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, I kind of felt like I empathized with the sentiment, although not in the same way. Like it was kind of like seeing a different way of that iteration. And so I was just like, oh, you know, my previous story is very similar to this, and let me show you how it's not necessarily the case.
Yes. I love that. You know, it's so interesting. Both of you have such interesting paths to getting here. And, you know, Carolyn, you're a great example of why we need to really value and prioritize external recruitment. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't mind sharing, Carolyn, how many jobs did you apply for at Cornell before you finally got the one that you got?
It was something like 19 times.
That's just flat out crazy.
Yeah. Well, okay. And I just, you know, as a professional admissions person, right, I did the whole like, oh, I'll apply laterally. I'll apply to the jobs that are my next professional step. And then I'll apply to jobs that I've hired and supervised myself that I know really, really well, but I know I'll be looked at as overqualified. So I just couldn't find that sweet spot. Yeah. But it definitely took that hiring manager to say, look, you're bringing two really important things that I need. Mm-hmm. I need somebody who can really strategize and recruit for diverse populations in veterinary medicine, right? Mm-hmm. And then I need somebody who has experience promoting and strategizing diversity, equity, inclusion, and a sense of belonging within a higher education environment as a community. And that's something that I would do presentations about and trainings. And so she's like, you have those two things, you know, and I was a former director, right? She was like, I feel like you could really learn the HR part really quickly. And so if you're willing to learn it from me, I'll teach it to you. And that was just the most amazing opportunity that I feel like I got that chance. And then I forgot to mention also that the reason I'm in my current position is because I did do that volunteering about looking at the efficiency pieces. And the reality is then when this position opened, right, it was like earlier than I thought I would leave my job at the College of Veterinary Medicine. But it was also really kind of like, look, there's a project or there's an initiative to try to centralize high volume recruiting for positions to make it better for, you know, candidates, hiring managers in Cornell. And so I was like, you're talking about admissions right there. Like that is a direct place that I feel like I can really, really bring like solid experience and energy to. And I'm really passionate about it because of my experience being, you know, rejected. And I say that it's through no fault of any individual or group. It was just really the fact that a lot of the searches I was applying to were non-centralized. So there was just a lot of inconsistency, a lot of confusion and no communication. Like no one would give me feedback. And I thought, like, I just don't get it. I can't crack the code. And I honestly almost moved back to Seattle, but it was because I had basically told my wife, I'm like, I'm clearly failing at getting a job at Cornell. Like, I am not Cornell material, or I don't know what.
There's so much of what you said that I just need to highlight. First of all, it's so unfortunate that, you felt like there was a secret code that you needed to try to decode with your decoder ring, you know? And it's like, what, you know, despite all the amazing experience you had. And so, yes, hats off to Mary Beth for recognizing transferable skills.
Thank you.
I'm not going to let you say that she took a chance on you, because I think that's ridiculous. She did not take a chance on you. She just finally recognized what you did, what you legitimately had offer. That for whatever reason, because of the way those other hiring processes were set up, that couldn't come to light for other people in the way that it did for her. So I think that really speaks to something that you're both trying to do in your current positions, which is to make that process feel far more attainable and accessible to everybody, not just the applicant, but to the managers too, for them to be able to really see, you know, in what candidates have to offer and to be able to really find people that are going to work well for them.
And, you know, thanks so much for that, Erin, because I also think, you know, understandably, hiring managers are in a position where they fall on. They're just like, by the time they can post a position, it has to go through a process of really, really good evaluation in terms of, look, if somebody decides they're going to leave their position, you don't just think about like, okay, well, I just need 2.0, that person 2.0. Like, it's really a chance for that hiring manager and that team to look at, you know, the work, the team, the workloads, and say, what is it that we need to be having this job classified as so that we can really bring somebody new in to really make the change that we have now versus, let's say, somebody who's been for, you know, in their job for 5 years and then they leave. Well, they've made their impact in that job. They've made that job whatever it might have been and had their own systems and whatnot. But the hiring managers, I think, you know, understandably, by the time they can actually recruit a position and then fill it, it's like at least 2 or more months probably. And so who I always say, like, well, who else is covering that work? It's usually the supervisor and the team. And so they're understandably looking for what's going to spell relief, like now, right? And as recruiters, we get a chance to say, okay, when the time crunch becomes a pressure, that's when all the bias show up, right, in a recruitment process or even in a conversation with a candidate, because you've got the sort of blinders on of like, I just need to fill this position with the right person who's not going to like falter in the first couple of months. They'll pass their 90-day probation period, you know, that kind of thing. And as recruiters, we're kind of in that sort of like, I'm totally the recruiter that's like, you have to look at external candidates seriously. And you cannot like miss out on a potential really awesome match of somebody who's going to come in and provide a really different experience and a different perspective. And, you know, yes, you know, we're going to always have a goal of making Cornell as diverse and having everybody really engage and feel like they have that sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to talk that talk, we need to walk it also by really being intentional about our processes and really like just calling ourselves in on biases that show up in hiring processes, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And just really being pretty clear about this is what it takes to succeed in a position and in that particular role. Mm-hmm. This is what we're looking for. And then not changing the target midway through the process.
I think that some of the examples you gave really speak to something that we've talked a lot about on this podcast in the past, which is the importance of seeing how you need to take an inclusive and equitable approach to your work, no matter what type of work you do, you know, no matter what your job is. And I think that you explained that. Brad, I'm curious from your perspective, like, you know, thinking about everything Carolyn said and your own experiences, how do you do that? How do you apply an inclusive approach to your work? But also, how do you help the managers do that too when they're in a state of, I just need somebody. I need somebody right now. Like, you know, how do you do that?
Right. Yeah. No. And I think the framework of considering, you know, meeting that person who's that person 2.0 from the person who previously left the position is an interesting one and one that comes up frequently.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is really important to kind of frame with a hiring manager, we do something called an intake meeting where we're really establishing expectations. And oftentimes we ask questions that will kind of bring these ideas to the forefront so that we can address them, which is really helpful in establishing the scene. And so one of the things that I kind of think of is just, you know, you've got two cars on a racetrack, right?
Mm-hmm.
One has an amazing takeoff speed, but its top speed is limited, whereas one might take a little bit longer to get up to its top speed, but once it reaches cruising speed, it can operate much more efficiently and quickly, right? And
right.
So a lot of the times those direct skills that you're seeing on paper, on mm-hmm. a resume, are that kind of that person 2.0. This looks like that person on paper. But that person is often not just the list of what they've done, right? They had skills that were interpersonal. They had a way that they approached a problem, the way that they approached their team and their community that are super key and harder to, you know, really encapture in a resume. And so one of the things that I always like to share is that, you know, we want to look at external candidates. We want to look at internal candidates and we want to, you know, invite a good amount of people into those screening conversations so that we can really get to understand them as a full person and understand how they would approach a problem, not just what problems they have solved previously, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. so I think that's a really big key part in establishing the conversation. Beyond that, you know, we also have EEO goals that we always want to be mindful of and work toward. We also share the SPDs, the staff position descriptions with candidates in advance, and we share interview questions. And 99.9% of the time whenever it's possible, at least for the screening interviews, and encourage hiring managers to do so too. And one thing that I would share is that I'm not a person who generally gets nervous. I'm happy to do public speaking. I'm happy to get up there in front of people and speak and present. However, interviews are my exception.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I get super nervous. I get like shaky nervous during that.
Tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
There's a whole lot that goes into that. You know, mm-hmm. who loves to be interviewed? Like, not too many people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the things that we get the opportunity to do is be that warm, welcoming presence that can alleviate some of that,
right.
And be kind of a guide through the process,
yeah.
A resource for folks when they have questions. And frankly, also the hiring managers too, because sometimes they need guidance and sometimes they want to know how to approach a thing. But being able to share those questions, being a warm, welcoming presence with a smile on our face during an interview is super key. How many interviews have you been on, Carolyn, where everybody in the meeting over Zoom, yes, straight-faced, very much like, you know, when you show that smile,
yep.
And you engage in the conversation,
yeah.
Proactively and you're able to kind of take their story and, you know, even maybe establish a small relationship with them during
right.
the course of the conversation. It goes so far and you get to meet the person genuinely.
Yeah.
So many flashbacks right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as everyone knows, I had like 5 or 6 jobs at Cornell and I'm just having so many flashbacks to how different every one of those experiences were.
Yeah.
In my very first job, I interviewed at a conference. first job at Cornell. When I left that interview table, I thought, well, I'm not going to get anywhere here, clearly, because they did just what you just said. They had sort of the stone face. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of give and take. They weren't rapping in all the right places. Like, it was, you know, I just was like, this is, and then, but yet I got a call back.
Right.
I got a call back. And I got told later by those same people that I was like their favorite candidate.
Right.
And I said, well, you could have fooled me.
Right?
That's right.
I told him that. I said, you could have fooled me. Now fast forward to this job. This is the first job when you all did just what you just said, Brad, where I got the interview questions in advance. And I cannot tell you what a difference that made. And here's why. It actually allowed me to be much more thoughtful about why I even wanted this job.
Right.
It gave me time to really think about each of those questions and to think about what I wanted to share with you, what I wanted to share with Toro and Sonia, right? But it actually was good for me because it allowed me to become much more, to gain a lot more clarity about why I was applying for the job, why I thought I could see myself do it. That is a win-win because you need to hear that. You need to hear that clarity. And I need to be clear as the applicant.
Yeah, we forget that the applicants are interviewing us just as much as
they are
interviewing them, right? But we go with the mentality that we're the big organization.
Yep.
They need us, not the other way around.
Yeah.
So I will share that I have been reflecting on so much of what you all said. And obviously, you know that my background also comes from recruiting. And so all of us in this conversation have benefited both, I think, from being external candidates as well as being internal candidates, right?
You're both examples of that yourselves.
Right, yeah. And I think you and I are too, Erin.
Yeah,
like, we started
out,
at one point, we were external. And then when we, especially in our current roles, all of us, we are internal candidates.
Yep.
So can the two of you talk a little bit about kind of the difference between that? I know, Carolyn, you emphasized that you really want the hiring managers to consider external candidates, right? We talked about, Brad, I loved your car example, right? Right, in that if it's an external candidate, they might take a little bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely.
But once they get going, they might bring more. And I feel sometimes we have that talent internally as well.
Yes.
So a little bit talk about the difference between kind of the recruitment versus the retention piece, if you will.
And how do you prioritize those?
Yeah, how do
because
you prioritize?
It starts to become like a tug of war. Almost, in my opinion, right? And it's like, which end of the rope should we be pulling more on? And how do you even begin to reconcile that?
I think a lot of that really has to do with, you know, as recruiters, we get a chance to have some conversations with those hiring managers about kind of like, look, you know, I'm all for internal candidates as well. Like, I'm not just like, oh, I just want to find the external. I really want to find the best mutual match, right?
Yeah.
So I always, before I open up any kind of hiring manager intake, like that's my interview with the hiring manager, right? Then I do my screens with my candidates. I always just tell both of them, my role is really like being a matchmaker, only on the professional end of things. And the idea is we just want to set everybody up for success. I feel like when a candidate is successful in a hiring process, they're more energized. If they get the transparency that they get from us along the entire process, we're building that trust. We're saying, like, we're not here to just fill the position and then throw you into the deep end hoping you're going to survive. Like, it's not that at all. It's more sort of like, who has the best chance of coming in and sort of being that race car that has the sticking power? And so it's really a matter of, I think, having a lot of conversations with the search committees, if there's a search committee involved, directly with the hiring manager and speaking with, you know, what is it that you need? Like, what are your must-haves? What are the things that count as success? Like, if the person's been in the job for 12 months, you know, and they've been really successful, what does that concretely look like in this job?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it's sort of then in the interviews, if we really guide them to ask the right interview questions to get the right information,
right?
So I always say to my candidates, my job is also about getting the right information about you in front of the hiring managers so that they can feel really confident they're making an informed decision. So I think there's a combination of looking at like, okay, yeah, there's the cover letter, the resume, you know, the experience, the data that we have from the interviews, the responses, right? And then there's also that bigger picture of kind of like, what does that mean for the match, right? How do you get a hiring manager to think about how you're going to complement the team? who's going to complete this team, right? Mm-hmm. What is it that you need? What are some of the skill gaps? What are some of the personality gaps in terms of, is it a pretty lighthearted team, or is somebody going to succeed being pretty laid back? You know, who's going to succeed in this? Because if you can really kind of make that match with the top candidates, right, and those hiring managers, then you can like make it happen in terms of both seeing that connection. And then I think that's just really a matter of also with the hiring managers having that conversation about the reality is, you know, we were all outsiders once. We were all external candidates once, 100%. Right? Yeah. So that's where it's kind of like, yeah, it's not about just necessarily like giving somebody a chance. It's sort of saying, well, let's not miss out on awesomeness here. And if there's somebody who's internal on the team that seems like a really great candidate, then great. Like that's awesome, because we are also about like the professional development, mm-hmm. career opportunities, and really looking at how is it that we can help our employees, right, think about their careers and the impact that they make. And that's super meaningful for me.
But I think too, what you said about it could be somebody internal to the team, but also internal at Cornell.
And
you
internal,
know, again, when we use the word recruitment, we often think that we mean external to Cornell, but really you just mean, you know, it could be throughout Cornell. Yep. Again, all four of us on this call have that experience where we literally changed careers, you know, at Cornell. You might not see yourself in that unless there's people actively trying to keep their eye out for the potential for you, you know, to switch careers. And Brad, it really much sounds like that's what happened for you to some extent. You know, you were in catering, but then there was this, you know, you had a chance to experience hiring and recruiting and, you know, and it took somebody else sort of working with you to realize, oh yeah, I could make that shift. You know, so catering might have lost Brad Stock, but Cornell did not lose Brad Stock.
Right, right. And, you know, both internal and external candidates, I would just echo, you know, they're both super important. And we are fortunate, while we live in a small town, we work for a very large institution. Yeah. And just that good variety of both, you know, internal candidates have institutional knowledge. They mm-hmm. have an understanding of our internal systems. External candidates have fresh perspectives and a new way of doing things and innovation. And so both of those things are incredibly important. And without one or the other, we can lose out on a lot of value. Mm-hmm. It's a big world. I think that it's really important to be open to understand that, you know, somebody can come in from either side and just really be the perfect match.
Well, and sometimes it's not even just about fresh perspectives. It's different perspectives.
Yes.
Like you said earlier, having that experience at the Greater Ithaca Activities Council, you gained some insight as to how Cornell was being perceived by our local community members, with none of us who were in the middle of Cornell would even have recognized that, right? But it took somebody external and your openness to hearing that to realize, oh, yeah, this isn't what we want to go for here, you know? I also think when we open it up like that and we make room to consider both internal and external, it also allows us to have better potential at really diversifying, you know, our population more in many different ways, right? Identity, background, perspectives, you know, skills, all that kind of stuff. And Brad, you mentioned earlier about how EO, and you're referring to equal opportunity, right? You know, equal opportunity. Tell us more about that, because I think that's a good example of something that has been around for a long time. Yeah, EO goals. But I'm not sure everyone fully knows, you know, what that means.
And, that's
and
fair.
why that really matters. Not just why it matters in terms of what's written on a piece of paper, but why it really matters.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to basics and avoiding the acronyms. EEO goals stand for the Equal Employment Opportunity. And policies and practice that are really designed to just ensure fair treatment and access for all individuals in the workplace. You know, it's about avoiding discrimination based on protected status. And it's really important for a lot of practical reasons. So, of course, it promotes diversity and inclusion. It improves employee morale, productivity, for all the reasons that we talked about with that perspective piece. Compliance with laws and regulations. So we are federally funded. And so that's an expectation that we're living up to our expectations with EEO goals. And it enhances a company's reputation both locally and abroad. And it mitigates risks along those legal lines as well. Mm-hmm. It's about building a fair and equitable, productive workplace. that just respects and values variety of perspectives, diversity. And I would say that it's also, you know, important. Sometimes there's pushback about there's a requirement to hire X or Y based on EEO goals. And I think that it's really important to remember that what we're looking to do is build pools of applicants that reflect the community we live in.
Right.
And then from there, we select the best candidate for the job.
Right. That's it.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say, Brad, is that EEO, Equal Employment Opportunity, isn't about who you end up with.
Right.
It's about who you've given access and opportunity to consider.
Yeah.
Am I getting that right?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And it's also transparency and intention around the outreach and relationships that we're trying to build with potential candidates.
Yeah.
Right? So keeping us at least aware of what does this sort of compositional diversity look like,
mm-hmm.
right? And what's available in terms of potential applicants? And then how do we go out and get them? Because we can't just sort of post a job and hope.
One place.
Right?
Yeah.
Like everybody's looking at you know, LinkedIn or whatever.
That would
right?
be easy.
That would be so easy. But it's just not. And understandably, I mean, there are going to be people who are going to be really kind of like, oh, they'll see an ad of some, you know, of ours where we placed it very specifically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, oh, well, when they see that ad there, they'll hopefully know that's what's something that Cornell really values and takes seriously.
Right.
And so that EEO stuff is really mm-hmm. about a big picture, and you know, it's the compliance piece, but it's also kind of like intention and transparency that we really care about this
right.
because it makes us better. It makes us, right, more diverse people on a team make better problem solvers.
Yeah. I actually love the distinction that we just made, because when we talk about EEO or diversity or hiring process and all of that combined, there is this conversation that happens, especially if you are the diverse candidate, right, that happened to get the offer, the conversation is very similar to, oh, you are the diverse hire, right?
Yeah.
You were hired because of your race or of your gender or your ethnicity or whatever identity you bring to the table. And so I love making this very, very specific distinction here in this conversation that is not the case. They are hired because they're still the best candidate for the position,
exactly.
right?
They are.
The idea for the EEO is not about who actually gets the offer at all. It's about all the work leading up to it, right?
Yep.
And I am so glad that we talked about that, and I'm glad that our audience members get to hear that
And honestly, what Brad and Sonia and your team did with GIAC is an example of how you walk the walk of EEO. You didn't just talk the talk, right? You brought the process to them. You found a way to make sure that process was accessible to as many different kinds of people as possible. You know, you may have ended up with 17 hires who all are very similar. Who knows? That's not the point. The point is what you did to lead up to that.
Yeah, similar to you providing the questions ahead of time, right? So from an EEO perspective, we're looking at that not necessarily for race, gender component, but from a disability perspective. This way, if a candidate does have a disability, they don't actually have to out themselves, right, in a hiring process. And then ultimately that then doesn't impact the decision, right? Whether we know it or not, unconscious biases happen, right? And so as much as we talked about how amazing it is as a candidate to receive the questions ahead of time, how amazing it is for somebody who has a disability and now doesn't have to ask for that kind of information ahead of time, right?
Absolutely. And the reality, too, is, I think interviews are just unintentionally biased toward extroverts.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, oh, yeah, you know, and I'm a super extrovert, like we're, you know, right to the hilt. But but, you know, it's like I think of my candidates who are just need that processing time to feel like, OK, I'm giving the answer that's not going to create so much more stress for me because I have to do it on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yes.
not, you know, it's not a pop quiz. It's really an exchange of information. That's all we're trying to do.
Yep.
And so sending the information in advance just helps create or rather establish the sort of relationship of like, I'm working for you too as a candidate.
Right.
I'm not here to just judge or to judge at all, but really sort of kind of evaluate whether or not do you have what it will take to be successful here.
Well, and like you said before, Carolyn, it's also only helping a manager to get the best version of that person in that moment so that they can make an informed decision about whether this person's going to complete them.
I've always, it's so funny because I've always said like the interviews are so subjective, right? And so I wholeheartedly agree. I'm like, it's my opinion as a hiring manager or as an interview committee of everything, right? So it's my opinion of your resume. It's my opinion of the way you, the everything that you share in an interview. It is so subjective, right? So when it's that subjective, all of my biases come with that, right?
Yeah.
So as we end our conversation, which has been fascinating, as you all know, because that is my background, I absolutely love talking about recruitment anytime, any day. Aaron knows this as well. So as we end this conversation, do you have any suggestions or advice for our listeners who might be struggling in their job search?
Gosh, there's a lot. We have some resources. Yeah. So I would say, read the job description thoroughly and understand the role and think about how your experiences align with the role that you're seeking, especially if you're looking to make a career change to a different industry. I think it's really important not just to talk about what you've done, but how what you've done matches to what you hope to do. So let that be the voice that guides your application materials, your resume, your cover letter. Make sure to include both. Look at the position posting and see what the requirements are and what they're looking for applications, because the last thing you want to do is get overlooked because you didn't include all the documents that you that you need to include, like a cover letter. I would suggest including a cover letter, even if you don't need to, because that really is a nice bridge between just the resume and actually meeting the candidate. And if this is like kind of that bridge, it might be the thing that is the defining point in being able to get that first screen interview. Connect with a recruiter. If you are having trouble with finding a job and landing that job or getting an interview, talk to a recruiter. I didn't know that was available here at the university until I joined the HR team, and it's a fantastic resource, you know? Yeah.
Obviously.
You know, there's a couple other things. I would say mentorships and gig opportunities are available as well. So, if you're looking to make a change and you don't have maybe like really defined experience in an area, there are gigs that might be available that could give you some practical experience to be able to make that bridge as well. And going back to my original story about how I found success at Cornell, there's a lot of advice out there, professional advice out there, how to say no when your plate's full at work. This is important. But in your career, especially your early career, I would say it's a great time to say yes when you can. It's just an amazing opportunity that can lead you down a path you never saw coming and you wouldn't have seen otherwise. It's a great way to gain a lot of different broad-based experience, and it's just also a great way to just show your value.
And then the one thing I want to add to that is I also think it's really great if candidates really kind of communicate and really think about how they engage with work, right? Mm-hmm. How they engage with what they're accountable to do, right? What are they brought here to do, and how is it that they can be engaged in it such that full on, you know, when, you know, we were thinking about like, oh, we're going to hire a recruiter to the team, right? I mean, Brad's name 100% came up and we were like, okay, well, let's see. So could we make it be, it would be a definitely a transferable skills plus, right? Because he has experience being a hiring manager, he has some experience recruiting, but the actual recruitment process, like we were like, yeah, could he learn that really quickly? And so that was sort of one of those things where I contacted Brad for an interview and we just had such a great conversation. I was like, oh my gosh, he's
well, I like,
you know,
what, what you're alluding to too is the importance of, because I have heard of some candidates who get scared off by the job description.
Yes.
Because
yes.
they can't do every single thing.
Oh,
but
yes.
I think
so
what you're saying is also
transferable.
Take time to think about what you can learn.
Yep.
And how you would learn it.
Yep.
Even if you don't already have it.
Or how a current skill that might not be a direct match to the actual job might be an awesome way to say, you know, a quick example of that would be, look, if you've never worked in higher ed before and you're looking to get into student services, right? What experience do you have in your experience, your work experience, that would really inform future success working with our students, right? And that means in your cover letter, you actually have to tell us, right? You anticipate working with students at Cornell, real students with real pressure, with real issues that come up, with real celebratory awesomeness, right? How is it that you, as that student services person, can really make that student shine within the context of their academic program, right? And to be able to actually at least give that picture to a hiring manager when they're reading the application will go so much further than like looking at a resume and being like, ah, they don't have student service experience, forget it. Reading an application, we're not sort of having to kind of dream up like and make up what the connected dots are. Does that make sense? Right? Like, right? It's like if they just tell us, then we're like, okay, good. We know exactly where they're coming from. That's why a cover letter is so important, because that's where you can highlight the transferable skills. Mm-hmm. We can see the direct skills on your resume probably, but whatever we see on the resume, whatever story that comes up that a hiring manager or a recruiter will come up with is based on whatever somebody submits versus.
That's a good point. It's up to us to write the story for you to read.
Help us like introduce yourself to us and help us understand what kind of impact you want to make in this role.
And one other piece, going back to what you said about the job description and that anxiety that can come up from reading a job description. So there's one piece in the required qualifications area that can trip up folks. And I think it's important that they hear that when we talk about required education and years of experience, you'll often see a clarification toward the end of that sentence. So as an example, this position requires a bachelor's degree and 2 to 3 years of related experience, or a combined equivalency of education and related experience. And so it's important to remember not to count yourself out. Somebody who has practical experience in the field does not necessarily need all the educational requirements in order to do the job.
Yeah, I love that. And basically, don't cut yourself off. Wait and let them cut you off.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
I love that, Erin.
Well, this has been a great conversation. Like I said, you made me relive my early days and then some at Cornell, which is not a bad thing. But I just love how much we have all examples of people who have had so many interesting experiences, not all good, but not all bad either, right? And I hope that people who are out there can take something from that and see the opportunity. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Well, Erin, you know that any conversation that is about recruiting, I am in 100% of the time. And what a fun time we had with Carolyn and Brad.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I'm sure just like me, you were also having some of your own flashbacks to your days. I have to say, though, I think one of the things that really came out for me in this conversation that I liked was how it feels as though the whole process of hiring, recruiting, whatever, is really turned a corner from when I first started at Cornell, in that it feels like it's being done with so much more intentionality, so much more care, and care of, definitely care of the candidates, but also care of the managers. Yeah. You know, I really think both of them talked about how they really are trying to help people on all sides of this to end up in the best situation possible.
I agree with you, because the caring for the managers, right? Because the initial reaction is like, oh no, I'm a dominant person. This workload still needs to get done. So we're going to have to distribute all of that amongst our current staff, which means everybody's overloaded, right? So the goal is to get somebody in the door ASAP, right? And if you can get somebody in that already knows how to do that job, that's even better, right? And I love that they actually talk the managers through taking a little bit of time to make sure that you get that person that actually complements that team, that's going to help elevate your team to that next level. Yes.
And the reason why I love that is because I have gotten so tired of hearing that phrase, well, they just won't be a good fit.
Correct.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, that actually, if you really think about that phrase, it means you're looking for somebody that's just like everybody else. Which they really highlighted it. No, and you too, it sounds like in your days, really highlighted the fact that, no, you have to look at what's missing.
Correct.
And find somebody that is going to, as they said, complete you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then I love that we talked about that also from the candidate's perspective, right? And how much the candidate experience has improved, not only in the story that Brad shared about his experience with the GX Center in Ithaca, but also, you know, we talk about providing the questions ahead of time, right, to candidates. We finally realized amazing that candidates are interviewing us.
Yeah.
More now than ever before in this
in
this world where anybody can work from anywhere,
yeah.
right? With
yep.
with the hybrids and the work from home concept that is now so prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
But this candidate experience is so important that they need to feel like this is an absolutely phenomenal organization.
Right.
And
right.
you, even an individual who you mentioned that you'd been here at
yeah.
Cornell for 20
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And even you experienced what an awesome concept that was, right?
right?
That they
mm-hmm.
cared about you as the candidate.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was a very different experience than many of my prior ones. And like I said, and I really can't emphasize this enough, it actually was the first time that I feel like I actually put a lot more thought into my part of that process,
yes.
too. You know, as to why, especially, and I think that's so critical if you are looking to change fields.
Yep.
You really want to be thinking critically about why. Why, and like Brad said, you know, you have to look at what you've done up until now
mm-hmm.
and think about how that matches up with what you hope to do, you know? And yeah. that really was a valuable process for me to engage in, to think about, you know, why? Why would I now want to switch fields? Why would I want to do something else? And why do I think I'd be good at that? Why do I think that makes sense
right.
for me, right? And so having those questions ahead of time really allowed me the chance to think through all that more thoughtfully.
And actually be able to share a little bit of your transferable skills,
mm-hmm.
right? In a way that then really speaks to the manager and what they're looking for.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Absolutely. And I completely agree with the point Carolyn made about why cover letters are so important.
Yes.
I think, you know, anybody out there is listening, if you think cover letters is so yesterday or so old school, no, it's not.
No.
That really is the place for you to tell your story much better than a bulleted resume could
exactly.
ever do.
Exactly. Because that's so, like you said, it's so regimented, right?
Yes.
In the way the resume looks,
mm-hmm.
that this is where you can kind of share
mm-hmm.
the passion mm-hmm. that you have for certain types of roles,
right?
right? And that's where you share the experience or the transferable mm-hmm. skills that you have. Yep.
The last thing I just want to add, you know, we asked them what, you know, for the advice to people that might be out there struggling to get in or to move around or to move up. You know, I have a piece of advice of my own,
mm-hmm.
and that is reach out to people like me and you who have done it.
Yes.
Who you know have been at Cornell, who have moved around, who have, you know, found new opportunities. Brad said finding mentorship, that includes finding people who have done that and
yeah.
talk with them about how they've
yeah.
done that.
And I'll share that my last thing that really just stood out to me, and I'm so glad we brought it up, was that distinction around EEO.
Yes.
And because when we, especially in the work that you and I do, you
yeah.
know, we've heard this over
yes.
and over and over that,
yes.
oh, all you care about is getting diverse people here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are diverse hires, right?
Right,
and it's
right.
not about the skill set that
mm-hmm.
everybody brings. And
mm-hmm.
in reality, it is the complete opposite, right?
It is.
So the equal employment opportunity concept is all the work leading up to the hire.
Yes.
And at the end, the hiring manager is always, always told to please just hire the best candidate
yeah.
for the job, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But all the work leading up to it is so important. And
mm-hmm.
I'm so glad that we talked about that
today. I am too. I am too, because we really need to emphasize it's not about who you end up with. It's about who you have access to possibly end
Correct.
Up with.
Correct.
Right? And as somebody with a visible disability, I've not been immune to being concerned sometimes that, oh, what am I really being hired for? But if I can tell that the process, you know, is one that I can trust and I can see and feel good about and know, oh, yeah, no, they're hiring me for me.
Yeah.
Not for any of those specific identities. That makes a big difference for your own ability to feel successful in the role.
And I will share lastly that I know we talked about sometimes struggles that candidates experience when they go through. And I will share a different perspective
mm-hmm.
with our listeners that my experience was very easy in
yeah.
terms of getting into Cornell. And I think it's because I approached it with a different mentality and,
yeah.
and different attitude. So the position that I ended up with was the only position that I applied for.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, again, I think I very similar to what Carolyn said, like you know, you look at what you are qualified for, what you want to do,
yes.
what your interests are. You apply for the role. And as a recruiter, I always talk to people so much about having the confidence when you apply for these positions.
Yeah.
That when I interviewed, and I think my spouse and my husband asked me, like, how did it go? And my answer was like, yeah, it went awesome, right? Because,
mm-hmm.
like, why would I apply for a job thinking I wasn't going to get it? That is not
yeah.
the that is not the recruiter mentality. If I apply
mm-hmm.
for it, it's because I'm the best candidate,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm going to get that job. And so, but I also can understand how when you have that recruiting background and then you don't have that type of an experience,
mm-hmm.
what that could do, right?
Well, and how as somebody who has applied for things and have not gotten it, right. even though I knew full well I was the best right. candidate, like, it really, we have to also be real about not letting that stop us
That's
from
correct.
Finding something else.
That's
recognizing
the key.
That, okay, that this wasn't meant to be. Yep. I may have thought it was, but it wasn't. So I just have to go find something else that deserves me.
That's you that know? Was always my attitude. Is like, oh yeah, I did awesome, and mm-hmm. if I don't get it, that's fine. There's another job yep. around the corner.
Nope. Yep. Then we can't psych ourselves out.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm glad that we're ending on that message yes. to everybody.
Yes. Thank you for listening. This podcast is a production of the Department of Inclusion and Belonging in collaboration with the Cornell Broadcast Studio. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts and rate and submit a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners to find us and the show. For the latest updates on diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging at Cornell, be sure to visit diversity.cornell.edu. My name is Erin Sumner-Chase.
And my name is Toral Patel. We would also like to thank our co-producer and sound engineer, Bert Odom Reed, as always, for making us sound amazing each and every episode.
Thanks Bert!